from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. You have to wonder what the College of Cardinals is thinking now. The man they selected as Pope seems to be lighting a fire under the church that's creating more than just white smoke. In a wide-ranging interview published yesterday, Pope Francis said the church has locked itself up in small-minded rules. The new Pope, on the other hand, seems intent on picking the locks and opening the doors. What to make of Pope Francis and why it matters? Next on Forum. After this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. The reaction has been extraordinary, from local news to international reporting. The Pope has got people talking. In a lengthy interview published simultaneously yesterday in several Jesuit magazines around the world, Pope Francis laid out his views on how the church needs to change, who the church is and who it must serve, the role of women and gays. The interview even filled in his views on art and music. But more than anything, the article filled in him. It's not that the article represented a reversal in church policies by Pope Francis, but it did paint a picture of a man who, at a minimum, seems to want to reverse the tone and approach of the papacy. What the impact of all that will be on the world's 1.2 billion Catholics and on the church itself is our topic this morning on Forum. Joining us, Father Tom Rees. He's senior analyst for the National Catholic Reporter and a former editor of America Magazine, which is the magazine that published the article about Pope Francis yesterday. Father Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Delighted to be with you.
Happy to have you join us. Rachel Zoll joins us as well. She is the national religion writer for the Associated Press and was at the Vatican when Pope Francis was selected. Rachel Zoll, good morning.
Good morning.
And Jimmy Akin joins us as well, columnist for the National Catholic Register. He blogs at jimmyakin.com. Jimmy Akin, good morning as well.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Happy to have all of you join us. Rachel Zoll, as you sat down to write your piece about this yesterday and about the interview itself, I'm curious about, as you read the interview and as you prepared your own reporting on this, what was striking to you? What jumped out at you about that interview?
I guess it wouldn't be fair to say everything, but it, pretty much everything. It's been an incredible just last 24 hours, first to see that this interview even happened, for a pope to sit for an interview this lengthy, actually so soon in his papacy, is amazing. It's the first in-depth glimpse that we've gotten of the kind of framework that he's going to put around his papacy, what the goals and the vision for his leadership will be, but also the frankness of it, how blunt he was. Often the way that these interviews happen or even the documents are written, it's a little bit difficult to know what is being said. This is very clear in so many ways about what he meant to want to say to the church.
And Father Tom Rees, your reaction as you read through the interview?
Oh, I agree with Rachel entirely. I've read, hundreds of church documents, most of which have put me to sleep. They're terribly abstract and boring. This interview just jumps out at you. It's his vision of the church is just extraordinary. He talks about the church as a mother, and that he wants the church to be healing wounds and warming hearts. This is a man who knows how to write a lead, and the lead he wants out there at the top is the message about the saving love of God.
And is it more than tone and approach? A number of people have said this doesn't necessarily represent great doctrinal change. He just wants to be put out a more open, a more welcoming image of the church. Is it more than that to you, Father Reeves?
I think it is. I mean, tone and style matter. Symbolic gestures matter. This is a church that is all about symbols. And basically what he's doing is returning to the style of Jesus. Jesus was a storyteller. He told parables. And that's what this pope does. When you read this, you see he doesn't talk in abstract philosophical language. He tells stories. He uses images. He's a pastor who wants to communicate with his people. You know, he was once a high school literature teacher, and he wants to keep the students awake and interested in the message that he has to give.
And we now know he also likes films by Fellini. So,
yes.
Jimmy Akin, what do you make of all this? We just heard Father Tom Reese say this is a priest who knows how to write a lead. What was the lead to you? And did you find that lead one that was welcoming, or was it one to you that sort of made your eyebrows raise?
Well, I think that this is very much in keeping with the style that Pope Francis has established. Every pope has his own style. I think probably Pope Francis would be a little uncomfortable with the idea that he's returning to Jesus' own style. Jesus did indeed use stories and parables, but he also could be rather sharp and pointed in some of the things he would say. And thus far, Pope Francis hasn't called people a den of vipers or anything like that. I don't suspect he's likely to. I suspect he's doing what recent popes have tried to do in general, which is fight the stereotypes of the Catholic Church as a stodgy, outdated institution and show the dynamic love of Christ.
He didn't call it a den of vipers, to be sure, but he did say, Jimmy Akin, that the church must not be a nest, quote-unquote, protecting our mediocrity. So while it may not be a den of vipers, he pretty clearly and pretty bluntly indicated that he thinks the church needs to change.
Well, I think that he definitely thinks that there needs to be more energy put into evangelization. He's talked repeatedly about the need for priests not just to sit in their rectories, but to go out into the streets and meet people where they are. I think he's definitely of the opinion that we need to do more in order to go out and reach people where they're actually at.
Of all the things, Rachel Zoll, that he commented on in this article, from the way in which the church is run to matters of doctrine to, of course, and we'll explore this over the course of our hour, the question of women and gays in the church. Of all the things that he touched on in this article, what to you represented the most striking change? What to you along those same lines, what do you think may have the largest significance of the things that were referenced in the interview?
Well, one of the things that I've been looking at or thinking about today is just what he talked about, seeing so many complaints coming into the Vatican from some Catholics complaining that another group of Catholics or individual pastor or a theologian is violating doctrine in some way, and how he was very dismissive of that. There have been some interesting cases and lots of incidents with the U.S. bishops over the last several years where the focus has been on very much trying to keep people watching.
Keep people in line, really,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I'm interested to see what impact that has. Does it in some way, what the Pope said, dampen that energy or that attention on that issue?
Well, let's take one example of that, because one area in which the previous Pope, Pope Benedict, was interested in sort of keeping people in line had to do, Father Tom Reese, with the role of nuns. And there was a lot of attention about making sure that nuns in this country in particular sort of stayed in line and were as focused on matters of church doctrine as they were in their role in promoting social justice. This pope seems to have it the other way around, that the course of order ought to really be exactly what American nuns seem focused on. Does it strike you that way?
Well, he does. He does stress the role of religious priests and sisters as prophets. They are to be the entrepreneurial engines in the Catholic Church. Coming, and this is what Francis did, Dominic, Ignatius, come up with new ideas, new ways of preaching the gospel, new ways of communicating the message of Jesus. And all of these founders of religious orders tended to get in trouble with the hierarchy at their time. He knows this history. He's not afraid of it. He encourages people to go out into the streets and do something, do things, even if they make mistakes. Hey, you learn from your mistakes and you go on. And I think that's quite exciting because we've been so afraid of experimentation. We've been so afraid of change. And he's saying, let it rip, that he's encouraging that kind of thing from religious sisters and priests.
I'm curious, Father Tom, about your own sort of reaction to this on a more personal level, in that 7 years ago, you were the editor of the magazine that published this interview, America, the Jesuit publication. And 7 years ago, at least according to the reporting that took place at that time, you were forced to leave that position because under your stewardship, the magazine published articles that represented a variety of points of view, and the Vatican wasn't happy about that and sort of nudged you out the door. Do you have a feeling of, if not vindication, at least a kind of satisfied glow, I guess, today?
Well, I mean, this is not about me. This is about Francis and his desire to project the message of Jesus, this message of love. I think it does portray a more openness in the church, a desire for dialogue, for discussion. He wants to meet people where they are and accompany them in this journey that we travel together as the people of God. I find this really exciting. I mean, I felt reading this interview like I was sitting with a brother Jesuit, you know, with a drink, after dinner, sitting in the living room, just talking about our vocation, talking about what it means to be a Jesuit, about the Society of Jesus, about the future of the church. And I was just so enthusiastic and blown away by the interview and the things he had to say. So for me, I found it extremely hopeful. It's fun to be a Catholic again.
Jimmy Akin, what's your reaction about who's happy and who's not? Who's feeling like, yeah, this is great, it's like having a drink sitting around the fire, as Father Tom Reese was just describing, and who's brooding this morning among American Catholics?
Well, I think that, you know, every pope, because they have their own style, is going to strike people different ways. And so, sure, there are some people who are really struck and impressed by Pope Francis's style. I'm one of those people. There are other people for whom, his style is something they're not really used to. And I understand that. I understand that not everyone's going to feel the same way. But this is a positive thing, and I admire his frankness in discussing these issues. I would say, though, that I don't think Francis views matters in quite the way they're being portrayed in the media. You talked, for example, about getting nuns to stay in line. And that's the kind of language of power politics that I think Pope Francis is trying to get away from. Instead of saying someone needs to stay in line, I think he'd say they need to embrace the message of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And in fact, he didn't have a different position on the American nun situation than Pope Benedict. One of the first things he did in office was to approve, to reaffirm the going forward with that review. So he's not any different on that subject.
It's a good point, Jimmy Akin. And in the interview, he says, I'm a son of the church. So in that sense, do you feel that he will not necessarily push to change whether or not it's the role of women in the church or the way in which homosexuals are welcomed into the church, that he has a difference in tone but not necessarily one of substance?
He acknowledges that there not all teachings of the church are equal in the fact that some are unchangeable, others can develop over time. He recognizes that. In terms of fundamental substance, he's not looking to change anything. As he says, he's a son of the church. He accepts the church's teachings on all these points. But what he does want to do is make sure that people understand first the fact that God loves them and has made salvation possible for them in Jesus. And after that is recognized, after that transforming encounter with Christ, these other issues can fall into place naturally.
Is it significant?
If I could just...
Yes, go ahead, Father Tom.
Just a little clarification there. I think we do see a substantial change, and we will see a substantial change in terms of the Pope's attitude towards religious women. I mean, quite frankly, you know, the problem that the Vatican and many of the American bishops had with the Leadership Conference of Women Religious was that they were not emphasizing the issues of abortion, gay marriage, and contraception. And that's exactly what the Pope says he is being reprimanded for. So the sisters were being reprimanded for exactly the same thing that the Pope says he's being reprimanded for.
Actually,
I think
Father Tom,
is quite different.
If I may just correct you there, if you've read the Vatican document on this subject, they're not criticized for not merely emphasizing these things, but for actually contradicting them and even using language about going beyond
Jesus. I'm sorry,
but
the LCWR never took a position in favor of abortion or birth control or gay marriage. That's simply not true.
Well, let me ask the question this way, and Rachel Zoll, let me put it to you. Is what's significant what is not said? In other words, when asked about homosexuality, when asked about the role of women, Pope Francis in this interview seems to say, we need to view people as people. We need to embrace them. He says about gays, we need to accompany with mercy. He says about women, we need to investigate and think more about this. He doesn't say, and now women can be priests or anything like that. But neither does he go on to repeat what has been the church's official position. So is it significant at least that he is not repeating that and seems to at least be opening the door to conversation?
It's very significant, and that's it's sort of a classic thing that theologians and Vatican watchers say, don't just look at what's been said, but look at what hasn't been said that is usually accompanying these kinds of comments. One of the things that we have not heard at all from Francis is the phrase that homosexuality is intrinsically disordered, which is part of the teaching of the church and something that a phrase that was used frequently by Benedict and others. Pope Francis in other contexts has said that he is not supportive, or he's indicated that he's not supportive of ordaining women, and that's not his intention. But he also doesn't, in this statement, seem to put limits around, beyond that, what women can do.
Rachel Zoll, you were there when the puff of white smoke went up when Pope Francis was selected. Did the College of Cardinals know what they were getting?
I don't know. That was one of the sort of exciting things, and it's an issue with every pope, not just this one, is that it's kind of like a marriage. You sort of know the person, you've talked to them, but once he's in office, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. I think that I remember Cardinal George of Chicago coming out of the conclave and saying that, you cannot predict exactly what Pope Francis will be like based on his record because the office changes the man. But in this case, there do seem to be some surprises.
Where will those surprises resonate the most, Father Tom Rees? There are 1.2 billion Catholics, largest by far of any Christian denomination, represents half of all Christians worldwide. The church now has its largest population in Latin America. 40% of the world's Catholics are there. 16% are actually in sub-Saharan Africa. So you see a shift in where the world's Catholics are. I'm curious about where this Pope's message, how he seems to be initiating his papacy, will impact the most.
Well, I think it's going to impact all over the world. Certainly his concern for the poor and those who have been devastated by globalization is a message that resonates very strongly in the global South and in the developing world. His concern for justice for workers is a message. I think, though, that the kinds of things that came up in this particular interview are going to resonate, especially with people who have left the church. I mean, he talks about the Church of Emmaus, you know, the two disciples who left Jerusalem after the crucifixion of Jesus and seemed to be leaving town depressed and sad. And he talks about journeying with these people, that this is what the church needs to do. I think a lot of people are going to give the church another chance, are going to take a look at it. In the past, the church has tended to blame the people who leave, you know, that they were not good Christians, they were weak, et cetera, et cetera. He says, no, well, hey, let's look up at ourselves. Let's look at the church, and maybe we need to proclaim the message of Jesus much more clearly, simply, in a way that's understandable to people and that puts emphasis on the love, the compassion of God for all people. So I think what this Pope is going to be attractive to a lot of people. In fact, I mean, the public opinion poll in the United States showed that only 4% of Catholics did not like what the Pope was doing. You know, people in Washington, politicians in Washington would die for those kinds of in fact, they'd kill for those kinds of ratings.
Yeah, and he doesn't have any term limits or elections to worry about.
Yeah, so his message is being, I think, very well received across the world.
Father Tom Rees, senior analyst for the National Catholic Reporter. He joins us along with Rachel Zoll, national religion writer for the Associated Press, and Jimmy Akin, columnist for the National Catholic Register. If you'd like to join our conversation about Pope Francis, what he had to say yesterday, what he represents to the world's Catholics, do you like what he has to say? Are you excited? Does it make you want to return to the church if you're someone who's Catholic but has stayed away? What's your reaction to this? Or are you unhappy with the direction that he seems to be taking? We'd welcome your comments and thoughts. You can post them on our website or on our Facebook page. You can email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. I was interested, Jimmy Akin, in this interview about how he seems to want to bring about change. And he references Pope John the 23rd in this way. He says, in his own way, John the 23rd adopted the attitude with regard to government of the church when he said, see everything, turn a blind eye to much, but correct a little. John saw all things, the maximum dimension, but he chose to correct a few, the minimum dimension. You can have large projects and implement them by means of a few small things. It's an interesting observation, I think, about how you go about trying to change a huge institution. What did you make of that? And what might that mean in terms of the small things that he might focus on to sort of have a larger rippling out impact?
Well, I think that it's an expansion of the approach that's been taken by recent popes, including John Paul II and Pope Benedict, both of whom were very aware of things going on in the church and turned a blind eye to many, but then focused in on certain things they thought were important. In Pope Francis's case, one of the things that he obviously feels is important that can seem like a small thing is getting to the preaching of Jesus Christ and making that the central message and not allowing these other issues to be a distraction from that. And that's already paid off, and it's created a lot of focus on this. It's created a lot of positive goodwill, and it's getting people all over the world, including on this on the fact that the Pope is taking this approach, and that's a good thing. That's what he's trying to accomplish.
Jimmy Akin, columnist for the National Catholic Register. We'll continue this conversation about what the Pope is getting us to all think about, Catholic or not, and what the focus of the Church may be. What are the small things that you'd like to see the Church change or focus on that would ripple out in ways that would have significance? We'd love to hear from you at 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. We will get to your calls in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our focus this hour is on Pope Francis. In an interview published yesterday in Jesuit magazines around the globe, he got people talking about his views and the change that he seems to want to usher in to the Catholic Church. We're focusing on that during this hour of forum, and we'd love to hear what you think about what you have heard so far from Pope Francis and what his views represent. Let's go right to our call. Susan in San Francisco, or rather, sorry, Kathy is up first, and then we'll get to you, Susan. Sorry about that. Kathy, go ahead, please.
Hi. Pope Benedict was the reason I kind of left the church. I was just so frustrated with the direction the church was going. And Pope Francis gives me hope to come back to the church. I think he has more of Jesus' message of love and inclusion. Benedict's stand on women and gays and those things put me off quite a bit. So there's a chance I might come back now.
Okay, Kathy, thank you. Thanks for getting us started this morning. Let's go next to Susan in San Francisco. Susan, go ahead.
Hi, I just want to say I'm very, very inspired by our new Pope Francis. He's just so dynamic and, again, inspiring. And I'm a lapsed Catholic, as you will, but he just encourages your heart to really want to be of service, which I think is one of the wonderful legacies of the Jesuits. And I just want to say I get a little nervous of talking, but I just want to say he is very inspiring, and I just hope everybody can hear his message and listen and respond. So I want to say thank you.
Yeah, and Susan, if I might ask you a question. For you, it sounds like there's a sort of longing within you to be able to sort of go back to the church, but that you've kept away for reasons that you outlined. And so do you feel like that you're being welcomed back? Is there a sense for you of this allows me to go back to something I've always wanted?
It does. It really, really does. And I really think that I will be able to go back. And I love the Jesuit churches. When I was a little kid, I used to go to the guitar masses in the basement of the churches, and I used to sing. And I look forward to being able to do that again.
Susan, thank you. Thanks for joining our conversation this morning. Phil is next in San Jose. Phil, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I grew up in the Catholic Church 30 years before I finally gave up. I've always been disappointed with the leadership in the Vatican. I finally just gave up with all the holier-than-thou and thou shalt not. And in fact, I'm in good company. A lot of my friends are, in fact, the lapsed Catholic and even proud of leaving the church and its haughtiness and its, you know, we're better than you. And, you know, and of course, they're blaming us for leaving. Your speaker is just great on that. And to hear the message from Pope Francis, it's just a breath of fresh air, the real reinvigoration of the institution, a return to the basic message of love and that everybody, you know, needs something from the church. And the church is actually reaching out to the people instead of looking down on them, which is a great change.
Phil, thank you. Peter in Canada is next. Peter, go ahead.
Yes, I want to mention that yesterday I sat down and read the entire interview. I was very edified. It focuses on Jesus Christ. It focuses on the message of the church. And the whole thing about demographics and popularity contest, I hope that people read the entire interview, not what the media is doing with it, and that when they come back to the church, allegedly, they become pro-life and pro-traditional marriage, which is exactly what the Pope is. So no illusions. In other words, if they end up coming back to the church in order to encounter the contemporary Episcopal Church or, I don't know what, the Unitarian Universalist Church, they're going to feel that Francis has deluded them because he is just as committed to the doctrine that the church has proclaimed, that Jesus proclaims. I mean, it's obviously a difference in style, which I think is very welcome, but the truth remains the same.
Yeah.
And so I think people need to read the entire interview.
Peter, thank you. And again, as we noted earlier, Francis does say in the interview that he is a son of the church. And so this is a great, I think, question to pose to all of you about, you've heard from so many of our listeners already, Father Tom, that there's this interest, there's this desire to go back and a feeling that they're being welcomed back. But as Peter also notes, the question is, what will they be welcomed back to? You know, will it really be the same church with the same basic views, but just a kind of softer, warmer glow around them? Or will there be something really different?
Well, I love the image that Pope Francis uses of the church as a mother. You know, when we come home at Thanksgiving to our mother's house, we want to be hugged. We want to be greeted with warmth and love and be cherished by her. And the problem has been that the church has been like a nagging parent. You know, before you even get in the door, it's, you know, why haven't you done this? What have you been doing? And all, you know, this kind of finger wagging. And I think this change in style, this change in tone is very welcoming. Now, once people recognize that we're one family, that we love one another, that we're brothers and sisters, well, then we're going to have arguments, of course. We're going to have discussion. We're going to have debate. But we treat each other with respect, with love, with reverence. And I think that's going to make a big, big difference. Too many people in the church say it's my way or the highway and want to excommunicate one another, whether it's on the right or the left.
Yeah.
I think he's trying to change this tone so that we become more of a family and less of a debating society.
So, Rachel Zoll, one thing that's always been characteristic of the American Catholic Church is that there has been, among many American Catholics at least, a sense that you can be sort of an a la carte Catholic, that you don't really have to put on the whole uniform. You can put on the part that fits you, but you can leave off the portions that do not. And so if you disagree with the church's position on birth control, you know, you can still go to Mass and feel okay about it. It seems like in the last two popes, we're moving away from the idea of that you could have that sort of a la carte approach. Do you think that's now going to be more of what is available to American Catholics?
Well, I think for example, Pope Benedict talked about a smaller, purer church, not exactly in those words, but and so there was an expectation that, you know, look, let's be committed fully to the Catholic teaching, and if that's the case, then let's be in the church. But if you can't commit fully, then this is not the place for you. And Pope Francis is saying exactly the opposite, that if you can disagree, but you can still participate. So I don't exactly expect that there'd be much of a shock for anyone coming back, that they wouldn't know that the church is opposed to abortion, or that they wouldn't know
right.
The church supports traditional marriage as opposed to same-sex marriage. But there's a long distance to travel between how the tone has been and what Pope Francis is asking them to be. For example, in some dioceses, you had some of the teachers were asked to sign oaths, almost loyalty oaths, to say that they would only teach a certain thing when they were talking to young people or when they were in their religious classes. In some cases, you also have public, unfortunately, debates about whether or not the child of a lesbian couple should be allowed in a Catholic school. Those are the things that it seemed that Pope Francis was talking about, that those kinds of conversations aren't welcome anymore.
Is that how you see it as well, Jimmy Akin, that it's a big tent and it doesn't necessarily mean the tenants within the tent change, but everyone's welcome?
Well, the thing is, I think that the media has really done a disservice to the church and to the last several popes by allowing this stereotype to develop of the church as being unwelcoming. That's never been the case. Pope Benedict, in particular, since he's being kind of picked on a little bit today, has always emphasized the positive aspects of Christianity and invited people to come closer to God and to draw closer to God, even if they don't agree about everything. He famously, you know, met and had dinner with Hans Küng, a famous dissident Catholic theologian, had very cordial relations with him, and he's consistently invited people in a positive way. Pope Francis is doing the same thing, and I'm just gratified that now that message of positive invitation is getting more attention in the media.
It says something, though, about how the invitation matters. Wouldn't you say, Jimmy Akin? I mean, you can hear just from our listeners this morning, and we'll go to more calls in just a moment, that they're hearing the invitation in a different way.
I certainly agree, and I think that's very healthy.
To Roberta next in San Francisco. Roberta, go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to say I'm a Catholic, and I'm delighted with so many of the changes that the Pope has made. The morning paper talking about less emphasis that the church needs to have on contraception, abortion, et cetera, and also his call for women in more leadership roles, meaningful leadership roles. However, he has really missed the boat on women's ordination, because how can we really become equal leaders in the church if we're not allowed to be priests?
Is that a deal breaker for you, Roberta, or do you still
attend
church?
No, it's not a deal breaker for me, because I attend a service in San Francisco at Trinity Episcopal who welcomes us with two Roman Catholic women ordained priests on Saturdays. And the movie Pink Smoke Over the Vatican, that's shown on YouTube, they explain the history of it and how we did have women priests and women presbyters in the early church. And so the Pope, you know, as he's shaking up many things and saying this really isn't dogma and this is, and he's talking about perhaps priests don't need to be celibate, I wish he'd go a little bit further along this line and really look at how many of us are so disenfranchised because we're not allowed to become women priests.
Roberta, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for adding that in. Let's go next to Teresa, who joins us in New Mexico. Teresa, go ahead, please.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was raised a very devout Catholic. I went to college at a Catholic school, which really emphasized Christian humanism, got married in the Catholic Church, and I'm actually a civil rights lawyer for people who are poor and with disabilities because of my Catholic upbringing. I said to my mother, who is an extremely devout Catholic and goes to Mass every day, several years ago, I didn't feel like I left the church. I felt like the church left me. And I think what, given the discussion over the last couple of minutes I've been listening to me, it's almost an issue of prioritization. And I felt for several years, and one reason I stopped going to Mass is because I felt like a hypocrite, because I felt like the emphasis was on abortion and homosexuality and birth control, which, frankly, I agree with a lot of those standings, especially with abortion. I personally think abortion is wrong. I don't think it's my place to push my beliefs on somebody else. I think it's my place to show them compassion and understanding when they're in a really hard position. And I just feel like that was the emphasis, rather than taking care of our brothers and sisters and helping people who are poor, helping people who need help, and just the social justice issues that I think was the emphasis of the church when I was being raised. So I think that's what I'm understanding, is that Pope Francis is shifting the priorities, and I'm extremely excited about it.
Teresa, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Comments coming in on our website. A listener writes, his comments about gay people are equivocal, and I can't help but interpret his saying seeking the Lord as meaning being as celibate as I'm supposed to be. And until I hear that the church won't actively support the next Proposition 8, I'll believe that they will. Kathy writes, what is the response within the church to this, Pope? Well, we've been hearing a lot about that this morning. And Ryan writes, what was the Pope's role in what happened in South America? And Rachel Zoll, why don't you give us a bit of background on that? Because at the time of the Pope's selection, that was a bit of controversy about what his role was during that time in Argentina. You want to give us just a quick snapshot of what happened and what we've learned since?
Sure. Well, actually, I'll start with what he said in the interview itself, and that is that he talks about his time as a leader of the Jesuits when it was in the 1970s, and he was in his 30s, and he actually talks about in a very human way, the mistakes that he made, that he had an authoritarian style, that's the word he used, and that he should have been more consultative. But he said because of the authoritarian style, he was somehow or sometimes mistaken for what the phrase he used was a right-winger when he wasn't. That was one aspect of it. The dirty war. The case that most people have been focusing on is a couple of priests who were working with the poor in the slums, who had been kidnapped and believed to have been targeted by the government there, and whether or not the Pope had done enough, or as he was then not the Pope, whether he had done enough to actually free these men, protect them. Or in some cases, some people were saying that he didn't, that he cooperated with the government in trying to keep these men out. But there is one of them has said repeatedly, the one who's still alive, that's just not the case. He's at peace with the Pope, and that has not been. The way that it's being portrayed is wrong.
You know, just the use of that phrase, Father Tomrice, I'm curious about your reaction to it. You've all talked about the candor with which Pope Francis conducted this interview and the language that he used, that it's atypical for how most church documents, at least, are constructed. And just the fact that he would use the phrase, I'm no right winger, it was striking.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a journalist and an academic. I'm here currently at Santa Clara University at the Markkula Center for Applied Ethics. So we do a lot of heavy thinking, and a lot of academic discussions. But this pope, he talks in very plain language. The last two popes were more academics. Pope John Paul II was a philosopher. Pope Benedict was a theologian. They spoke in really academic type language that wasn't always understandable to the normal person in the pew. And what's different here is that we have someone who tells stories, who uses narrative, who, you know, as I said earlier, knows where the lead is, and recognizes how important it is. It really is like you're sitting down with an old friend in your living room and just having a nice talk. And so this comes from his experience of working in the slums of Buenos Aires, talking with people who have very limited education, talking with people who are trying to live good Christian lives, but don't always pull it off. You know, he talks about being with people where they are right now and traveling with them. So he is bringing a very different style to being Pope, much more personal and pastoral than we have seen in the past.
And back to our calls. Tina is next up. Tina, go ahead.
Hi. What I wanted to say is I'm a born and raised Catholic. Years and years and years and years. I have a very fond upbringing. I'm sharing that with my children these days. However, as my youngest daughter is going through her first communion, I do feel a bit of a disconnect. And the real key missing links, if you will, I think are passion and character. And with Pope Francis and his views and his honesty and the core of what brings us into a religious place, into a spiritual place, I really have great hope that what he's doing is going to impassion all of us, including the priests, including all of us attending Mass, and just coming down to the core of why we're here, which is that passion and that character and the spiritual connection. I feel it's missing now, and I really want to have it back and bring me a bit closer back into the Catholic Church.
Tina, thank you. What's striking to me as we listen to these calls, and let's just go once around on this briefly, is what you hear from people in terms of the kind of longing that they seem to have to go back to something that matters to them. What are you hearing, Rachel Zoll, as you write about this, as you've talked to people, perhaps even over the last 24 hours? What seems to be the core that's resonating most?
I think what people are so welcoming about is this, are feeling like they won't be chastised, that that there is actually a place for them in the church that they felt that there wasn't. Now, there may or may not have been a place for them, but we're talking about how they perceived the way that pastors or bishops or the past popes had talked about what the teaching was. You know, we don't know this for sure, but there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that that there's already been a kind of Francis effect, that people are coming back to confession who had never gone before or had abandoned it quite long ago, or people are coming back to Mass. And one of the things we'll be watching is whether that happens also partly because of this interview.
Yeah, yeah. Jimmy Akin, briefly on the Francis effect.
I think it's real. I think it's awesome. I think that Pope Francis has been able to crack through the media wall and show people the love of Jesus Christ. He's doing an excellent job in that regard. He's really encouraging people to think in a new way about their spiritual lives and how they might grow closer to God. And I think that's entirely positive, and it's awesome. And I just want to say, go Francis.
Father Tom, on the Francis effect.
I agree with everything that's been said. There's a new excitement. I mean, we have to recognize that in the United States, one out of three people who were raised Catholics has left the Catholic Church. I think that Francis is an opportunity for people to take a second look at Catholicism. There's an excitement here. There's a feeling of hope and joy that we have in the church again. And you know, his image of the church as a field hospital, you know, that's there to heal wounds and to warm hearts. I just think that is a great image. You know, it's not a bureaucratic institution that, you know, that lays down a bunch of rules and tries to keep people in line. It's a family, and I think Francis wants to welcome us back into the family.
Father Tom Rees joining us along with Rachel Zoll and Jimmy Akin. As you know, this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to do that, you can go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. And back to our calls. Irene in San Francisco is up next. Irene, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I'm a 79-year-old, all my life Catholic from St. Amedia's Parish, and I'm a very serious Catholic. I've been listening and staying with the Nuns on the Bus, or the network group, and the Leadership Conference of Catholic Religious Women is a very wonderful group of women who have devoted their lives to the church. And the Vatican in the past, and I still believe it has, is investigating and reprimanding this Leadership Conference of Catholic Religious Women.
Hmm.
Now, I am thrilled by Francis's style and what he's saying. I've read the New York Times this morning, and it's wonderful. But it's got to be more than that. He's got to really put an end to investigating the religious women in America.
Irene, thank you. Rachel Zoll, can you update us and on where all of that stands right now in terms of the role of the leadership within the American nuns and what their status currently is, I guess?
Right now, they're under the authority of the Vatican, under authority of visitors or bishops who have actually been appointed to review with them everything, actually, from their statutes to their speakers to what kind of events that they plan. There haven't ever since the investigation, and the decision that there was a need for reform, or the order for reform, has been announced by the Vatican. There hasn't been a lot of development publicly. There have been several meetings between the bishop who is in charge of the review for the Vatican and the heads of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. But so far, we just don't know where this is going.
Would that be for you, Rachel Zoll, an interesting kind of barometer for whether or not Pope Francis represents not just a change in tone and approach, and as Father Tom has reminded us, change in tone and approach are important, but whether or not he will go beyond that? Will what happens with the American nuns be an interesting way to measure how far this pope might be pushing change?
Well, he's in a very difficult position when it comes to that review because it started not under him, but it's something that he's inherited from the time of Pope Benedict. The reform itself reflects deep concern and criticism from the U.S. bishops who are still in office, still here, still working, about the direction of the religious sisters and the things that they focus on. One of the things that's been interesting, and Jimmy noted this, is that the Pope hasn't come out and said, okay, I'm throwing this out. I'm not going to have this kind of review. And also you can see in some of the comments that he's made that he is very dismissive of anything that kind of smacks of a New Age spirituality. And if you look at some of the speakers for the Women Religious Conference, it's possible to interpret that that's the direction that some of the things were going. That being said, the edge is off. If the Pope is saying, stop talking so much about these, hot button issues and let's talk more about people and being warmth and reaching out to people and focusing on social justice as being paramount, then the nuns seem to be in a stronger position. But we really just don't know where that is going.
Just in the moment or two we have left, I'm curious as to what you will be watching for, each of you, as to an indicator. He's only been Pope for a very short time. What will you be watching for, Father Tom, just quite briefly, if you would please, that will give us a better sense of the direction that he will be pursuing?
Well, he's done a fantastic job in modeling what it means to be a priest, what it means to be a bishop, what it means to be a Christian, and in changing the attitudes in the church and the culture of the church. The next two big issues are, who is he going to appoint as bishops in the church in the United States? So everybody's going to be watching that very carefully, especially in the Archdiocese of Chicago, where a new archbishop should be appointed shortly. And then secondly, we're going to be watching to see what kind of reform he brings to the Vatican Curia. Changes of attitude and structure and culture are extremely important and are probably even more important than changes of structure. But if you don't change the structures, then these other things can fade away.
We'll have to leave it there. I'm sorry, Jimmy Akin, not to get in one last comment from you, but we are out of time. And I want to thank all of you so much for lending your perspective and points of view on this topic. Jimmy Akin of the National Catholic Register, Rachel Zoll, National Religion Writer for the AP, Father Tom Rees, Senior Analyst for the National Catholic Reporter. And this is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.